I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this, unbelievably, is episode 177. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Griff. Good to see you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We're back in the studio again.
Yes.
Here on a deserted campus.
It wasn't as deserted as it normally is today.
This building is. There's hardly anyone here.
Normally, there's only one other person up on the floor with me, Deepak.
Yeah.
And then today there were four other people.
Yeah. Starting to get tired of working from home, I see.
Like me.
Yeah, you were the first one. You were the pioneer returnee to the campus.
No, there were a couple others who were here, you know, regularly before me, but probably on Rebecca's team, I definitely was the pioneer.
Yeah, because you were coming in regularly before I had decided it was safe to come back into the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, I don't know if normal is ever going to come back fully, but it's some sort of new normal is starting to unfold, it seems.
Yeah, and I think it'll continue. And I don't think we'll ever go back to the 5 days in the office. Got to be there for all five, because I think, you know, the tools have improved for people to communicate. Yeah. Our sellers take advantage of that. Some of the meetup organizers do Zoom calls and things like that. So I don't see us ever being back to a total 5 day model.
We could do a whole podcast on Zoom and speculate about its future, because it's the kind of product that, well, I don't want to say that anyone benefited from the pandemic, but come on, Zoom really benefited. That company took off. And now it's going to be interesting to see what they do to keep the product relevant and compelling in the face of growing competition.
Agreed. And just candidly, I like being in person. Now, that doesn't always work. I don't want to have to hop on a plane to fly someplace just to be in person. But for many instances, if people are in a similar location, in person, you can get, it's just more interactive.
Yeah. Triple mask and everything is fine.
Yes.
So anyway, it's going to be an interesting show.
It is. I just think it, when I see 177 episode, I think, wow, you're almost cresting 200.
Yeah, 200 will be here sometime this summer, I think. I did the math. It's hard to believe. 200 episodes.
That's incredible.
With hardly a repeat.
Right.
That's not easy. I mean, how far can you go into the selling topic without sometimes repeating yourself?
Well, but we make some changes every once in a while on our platform, don't we?
Yeah, and I look for them. I crave them. I said, oh boy, a change, something we can talk about. But what we're going to talk about today actually has been around for a while, and I looked back and we really never covered it. So it's going to be pretty
good.
Cool. Yeah.
So any guests this week?
Well, there are guests. It's you and me, Brian.
For the Brian and Griff show.
It's the
or the Griff and Brian show.
I prefer Brian and Griff.
It should be Griff and Brian.
No, I like alphabetical. You go first. I don't want to be first anymore. I take too much flack. So it's just you and me.
I have to give you a big shout out and say thanks for the advance notice.
Well, not to worry. I think you'll like the topic too.
Which is
business policies.
Oh boy. I'm glad I have my laptop, because then I can bring up my eBay and Seller Hub and look around in it.
Wait, when's the last time you looked at your business policies?
So I actually just sold a car on Sunday. And
congratulations.
Thanks. But I didn't use business policies, I don't think.
Because you should have.
I should have. But I think when in the Motors app, I didn't think I had it set up. Selling a car is something that's I've only done. This was only the second time I've done it.
Yeah, there's an option for setting up a shipping policy for Motors in business policies. We're not going to spend too much time looking at that, but it's there if you need it. So
had I looked at the regular side, I probably would have looked at my business policies, but I'd say prior to the December break.
Yeah. I spend a lot of time in my business policies, and I've got them, well, they got out of hand for a while.
Well, that's because we didn't delete them.
Well, no, it's because when you're listing, you can create a policy on the fly.
Right.
And if you do that, you can end up with duplicate policies or policies that don't make sense or policies that you don't use anymore.
Right.
So we're going to go through the process of how you create one. But more importantly, because I think most of our listener, one listener, knows pretty much how to do this, but it's the organization that can get out of hand. So I've got a process I use, and I think it may be helpful to other sellers. I don't know. Maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we go there, I think it's time to talk about any news we have.
Yeah, we've got some news this week. Well, the only news, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have had to deal with this, is the severe weather that we've had in the Midwest, Southeast, and Northeast all of last week and, you know, going into this week as well.
As we're recording, I think the Northeast is looking at a really, really bad storm.
Yes. And, you know, it's everything, Texas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, it's for the icy stuff. So severe weather conditions may delay pickup or delivery of your shipments. We're providing you with the support and protections to reduce any impact on your business. To learn more, visit the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements. And we posted one last week, and then we posted earlier this week about, I think, is it Landon? Whatever the icy storm one is that's kind of hitting the southwest.
Does it have a name?
I think the east one, the one that was in the northeast was just like a storm. But I think the one for that whole ice thing, for some reason, Landon is in my head. But now I'm probably spreading false information and I should actually open up my laptop and look.
Well, if we have to issue a correction next week, we will. By the way, there was some discussion on some chat areas about our episode last week with 1099-Ks with Manish Belsari. Some requests for some clarification about syntax and definition of terms. That team is working on a clarification and, if necessary, a correction. We didn't have anything in time this week, but we should have something next week, and we'll post it. We'll talk about it on the podcast, but we'll also post it on our Let's Talk About episode 176 in the community. There's that discuss the podcast link and on our Facebook group. But first, Brian, I think it's time for our topic this week.
Sounds good.
Brian, I know it's technically not the place in the episode where we usually answer questions, but we're going to make an exception this week. Since the email I'm about to read actually gave us the idea for the segment.
The email that inspired you.
It did. And looking back, I discovered we have really never spent a lot of time discussing the topic in question for this week.
Then I'm excited to hear the email.
Okay. We recently received the following email from eBay seller Lucretia.
I like that name.
Yeah. And it's not Lucretia Borgia, so don't go there. Oh, the Renaissance, my favorite period. Lucretia says, "Hi, Griff. I enjoy your podcast and listen every week." Well, thank you. "I still learn so much from you and the podcast. My seller name is Plucky Lucky. I didn't think I had a question, but I do. I started looking at my business policies today concerning my shipping. When I went to the business policy page in Seller Hub under Manage My Account, I realized I had 5 pages of 200 on each page. Some seemed the same, but when I tried to delete, I couldn't because I get a message saying this policy is being used by an item listed." This is exactly what I was talking about. You got to be so careful with this.
I feel her pain.
Anyway, Lucretia continued, "I know this business policy came out a while ago, but shame on me. I just ignored it. And when I listed, I just kept clicking on the first one under shipping on the listing page. Now I don't even know if I'm putting GSP, the Global Shipping Program, on my shipments. Sorry this is so long, but even after selling for 20 years this February, I get confused on some of the changes eBay constantly makes. Also, I would love a coffee mug, signed Lucretia." Those mugs are so popular. And of course, you'll get one. It's already been, in fact, it's been sent out today. I sent the list to Mark, our supplier, and those are going out today. Yeah, Lucretia, what a great email. Thank you so much, because this brings up a subject that I think a lot of sellers are just scared to death about having to do something with their tangled mess of 200 policies.
Well, I'm glad I never got to 200, but it's, I remember when I had over 36.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this?
That's a lot.
And then which is the one I need? And most people don't need 36 or 200.
Yeah. Anyway, Brian, this is what we're going to talk about, business policies. Cool. Now, fair warning right up front, this is a podcast, it's audio, and it's not sometimes easy trying to explain a process without the help of some visuals. Please keep that in mind, and we'll make this as visual as we can with audio.
So we have to paint the picture for him.
Yes. Lee once said that radio is theater of the mind, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. And if you aren't busy while you're listening.
Or driving.
That goes without saying that you're not driving.
Right. Or riding a bus. Yeah. Let's just say if you're at home in front of a computer screen and you aren't doing anything else, you should consider following along with us as we explore the business policy page in Seller Hub.
And as always, if you do get a little lost, remember you can always pause, rewind, and replay.
Or read the episode transcript.
That too, so you can follow along at your own comfortable pace.
That's right. You want to do this comfortably at your own pace, because it could be a lot of work here. If you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, not you, Brian. Oh. Our dear single listener out there.
Oh, right. Hi, listener. Why not listeners?
It's an old tip from my mentor and coach and co-host from the old eBay radio days. She used to tell me that.
And that is?
When you're speaking on the radio or in a podcast, talk as though you're speaking to just one person.
Ah.
Yeah, it makes it more intimate. Which in our case is not difficult because there probably is only one person listening right now.
I'm sure there are lots more than one. Three, maybe.
Yeah, three or four. Anyway, dear one listener, it's time to dig into the topic at hand, business policies.
And a good place to begin might be, so Griff, just what are business policies?
Well, I thought you'd never ask, and I'm sure she's thinking the same thing. Business policies are your various return and shipping policies that you create in advance, so then you can select them whenever you create a listing, as opposed to having to type them out every time you list and select the appropriate options.
So they're a time saver. Mostly.
Yeah, mostly. Think of them as a type of copy and paste boilerplate.
Except there's no copying and pasting.
Right.
So I create these policies as templates, and then whenever I create a listing, I can choose a set of business policies, the payment, shipping, and return details I want to apply to that listing.
Exactly. They're pre-configured. Business policies make the listing creation process and the management of any existing listings a lot easier and a lot faster. You just pick a return or a shipping policy from your list of templates and away you go.
So rather than setting my preferences in these areas on a listing by listing basis, I can streamline the process by creating templates. These templates can then be applied when creating new listings or even used to update multiple existing listings.
That's what I said. And if your business policy preferences vary depending on what you're selling, you can create a whole range of different templates. This gives you the flexibility to apply different postage or return details depending on what you're listing.
I noticed you left out payment policy.
Yes, I did, intentionally. Prior to eBay payments, there were a range of payment options a seller could offer a buyer in some situations. However, at least for sellers in the U.S., there is now only one option for payment policy, so you don't have to create any new ones.
eBay payments.
Yep. eBay payments. So we'll skip that one as a consideration for now and focus on returns and shipping.
Okay, how do we begin?
Well, to start, we need to navigate to our business policies page in Seller Hub.
I know this one. May I?
Well, be my guest.
Go to Seller Hub.
Yep.
You can get to Seller Hub by hovering on the My eBay link on the top of any eBay page and then scrolling down to the selling link.
Yes, you can do that, or you can use the URL ebay.com/sh/.
Or you can use Griff's URL.
Yep.
Once on Seller Hub, this has to be familiar to most of our listeners.
Listener, Brian. Listener.
Oh, that's right. Listener. Surely our listener has been to this page before.
Maybe yes, maybe no. We have to assume no.
I get it. It's starting to make sense now. Always assume the worst case.
Good, you're catching on. So continue with the nav.
Once you're on the Seller Hub overview page, click the tab for listings and then scroll down the column of links on the far left-hand side of that page until you find the link for business policies. Click that link and there you are.
Eureka! Business policies!
And now the fun begins.
Yes, it does, because now you've made it to the business policies page, and what you may see could be a little concerning if you've never been here before.
You may have pages and pages of different business policies.
Yeah, it can happen. Like it happened to Lucretia, you just start creating them every time you do a listing, and every time you create a new policy, it gets added to the list. Boy, you can end up with a lot of out-of-date policies. You can end up with a lot of redundancy, and it can get to, like in her case, she said she had 5 pages of 200 on each page. That's 1,000 policies.
That's a lot of policies.
Yes, it's a lot of policies. Here's the first step in putting your business policy house in order.
So it might help to get a notebook and pen or pencil handy or...
Or a Crayola.
Whatever. Or maybe just you can type on your laptop too.
Yeah, some people are comfortable with that. I'm not. I'm old school. I like to, you know, have a paper and pencil ready.
You might need to make a list, right?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. But first, to answer a part of Lucretia's question, let's go through the template for creating a policy.
Sounds good. Do I click Create Policy here?
Well, of course. Then select Shipping Policy as an example.
Okay, done.
Let's read through the options here. So, okay. Yeah, again, we'll try to make this as visual as possible. At the top of any policy page, in this case, the shipping policy page, is a place where you can put a name. And we're going to talk about creating a consistent naming convention. You can use mine or you can make up yours. The point is it should be consistent and easy to scan through and understand. And then there's a box for policy description where you can put more information. I use that box a lot. I'm going to show you later in the episode, in the segment, how I do it. And then for shipping, you'll notice there's a section that says U.S. shipping. You can select whether you want flat or calculated from a drop-down box. And then you see a box for services. And if you click the down arrow, you can see all of the available services for each of the carriers, USPS, FedEx, and UPS. You can offer up to three. You can put a cost if it's flat rate. If it's calculated, you can, you know, you don't have to worry about cost, but you, for either one, you can select free shipping for your first option. And below that, you can offer your combined shipping discounts by applying a flat shipping rule. That's a box. And we'll talk more about that in another episode. You can select your handling time there. And then underneath, there's a box for international shipping. And this will be where Lucretia can tell whether or not she's offering the global shipping program. Because if the box is checked, then that means that policy, when it's applied, will also allow for global shipping. And that's important because some people, like myself, we sell things, or I sell things, that sometimes we can't ship internationally. So I have to be right on top of that. Fragrances, I don't ship them internationally. It's just, it's a real hassle from the U.S. There's restrictions by all the carriers, and you can get exemptions, but you have to go through a process, and it's just
not worth it.
It's just not worth it for me, right? You'll see there's shipping rate tables. There's an option there. That's for sellers who have maybe different locations of items in different warehouses, and they use shipping table rates. And we'll talk about that on another episode. But for most of our one seller who listens, right, they're not using shipping rates. And then finally, there's a – and this is an old thing. This is the exclusion list.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, this has been around. This is legacy. You can select which countries you may not want to ship to.
And that applies – like if you're selling consumer electronics, especially super high-end stuff, there are certain countries where the U.S. government might say you can't ship those types of electronics to those countries.
Right, and you can put them on your exclusion list. So, Lucretia, these are all the options or settings you configure for a single shipping policy.
That should help clear up any confusion Lucretia might have about whether or not her policies include global shipping program.
Right. I hope that answers that part of the question. Now back to our regularly scheduled segment. The first step in organizing is to locate your most popular policies. And you can do that by sorting the list of policies by the column that's titled listings. This will put the policies applied to the most listings either on the top of the list or on the bottom. If it's on the bottom, click the header for listings again to resort from most to least. So let's take a look. So if you look, you can see, Brian, it said that, for example, as I mentioned earlier, for payment policies, there's only one, right?
eBay sets that up.
Yeah,
right?
eBay sets it up.
Because it's eBay payments.
Right. So we can start with the return policies. Note the one that has the most listings, and that's the first one we're going to edit.
What about the bar above the listing that has the buttons for reassign listings, delete listings, cleanup policies? Why don't we just use those?
So I explored that, and we could start there. And in fact, the one option you could use at this point is the cleanup policy option. This won't delete or change any policies that are already assigned to active listings. It will delete any unused policies and rename the rest. And since we are going to explore the concept of a naming convention, for this exercise, it's probably best to just bypass this cleanup policies option along with the rest for now.
Okay, but they are there if we need them.
Right.
What about the link on the right for the consolidate shipping policies? Is that an option we could or should use now or maybe later?
Not now, maybe later. Consolidating shipping policies pertains to flat rate shipping policies, and it will combine policies that are the same for their flat shipping, except for the costs. So it could end up creating, you know, some new policies. And this may not be what the seller is hoping to achieve. So I say ignore that option for now as well. We're going to focus on editing existing policies. And then we'll do some reassigning using bulk edit.
Okay. So for now, ignore the eBay provided options.
Yeah. For now. It's not that they're bad. It's just that we're talking about manual organization because you want to set your naming convention and you want to get rid of policies you're not using or never – well, I should say never, probably ever going to use. And it's not because the eBay provided options aren't helpful. It's, again, because this exercise that we're doing here, it's going to result in policy names or consolidations we may not want right at this point. Later on – maybe when
we
got through with the organization.
So in some ways, it's kind of like we're teaching them math before they use algebra.
Or a calculator.
Right. They need to understand the fundamentals.
Exactly.
Okay. So the next step?
Well, the next step is to start from the bottom and work our way up for each of the policies by establishing first what policies you need as a seller and how you're going to name them.
And this is after we've sorted the list with policies applied to the most listings top down.
Right.
Okay. And we're looking at the most used return policy.
Yeah, we can start with return policy for right now. So when you're looking at your most used return policy, click the edit button for that policy. And on the next page, you'll see text fields. They're kind of similar to shipping, but they're pertinent to a return policy. And they are the policy name, the policy description. There's a checkbox for if you want to set this as your default, you can leave that blank, or later on you can set one as your default. And then the return policy itself, it's divided into two sections, domestic and international, and you can set 14, 30, or 60 days, who pays for the return for each of them. And then there's a checkbox here that's really important because we get this question on the podcast all the time, and it's for replacement or exchange available. And if you check that box, it means that when a buyer does a return for an item that's using that policy, they can choose for money back, or they can select an exchange or a replacement, depending on which one you offer. But it's a buyer's choice.
This is where the seller has to select it to enable that choice for the buyer.
Right. It can't be enabled post-purchase. That's yes. Right. So it's time for us now to come up with a naming convention for the policies that you as a seller are going to consistently use and consistently apply to all of your policies, so it makes them easier to find when you're creating a listing. Now, I'm going to give you an example of my naming convention for my return policy, the one that I use most, and it is, this is how I name it, returns, yes, hyphen, seller, it means who's paying, the seller, hyphen 30-60, and that's because it's 30 days for domestic and 60 days for international. Then the choice, money back, and I include DOM and INT. And for me, that means domestic and international. So when I see that in the list of return policies, I know that returns yes means return accepted, seller pays for the return shipping, the window for return is 30 days for domestic and 60 days for international, the refund is money back only, as opposed to me offering the buyer a choice of money back or replacement or exchange, because my items don't work that way. And then it covers all domestic and international returns, so I say DOM and INT, because there's a limited number of spaces. In fact, you could put all of what I just said, and I do sometimes, in the text definition box for the policy.
But that is your naming convention.
Yeah, right.
A seller can come up with their own.
Oh, absolutely.
But that actually makes a lot of sense to me as I've read it. You know.
Well, I've given it a lot of thought. But again, as you mentioned, a seller can come up with their own one. Whatever works best for any seller is the one they should use, whether it's mine or their own. My only recommendation is that whatever you use, it needs to be a consistent naming convention across all of your policies. It's going to make them a lot easier to scan and select later. You're not as going to be as prone to make mistakes. If you only have three policies, it's not a big deal. But most sellers are going to have, like me, I have, I think right now, 20 active shipping policies. So it makes it easier for me to select the right one.
So how many return policies should a seller have?
Well, for returns, only as many as needed. For example, I only need two. One for domestic sales, only like for fragrances, because I don't ship internationally, and one for all other items that ship domestically and internationally, and I always pay for return shipping. So I just have two.
Makes it simple.
Now, you may have some items where you pay. You may have items where the buyer needs to pay for return shipping. So some may be 30, some may be 60. You have to write it down on your paper first. How many do I need? And then you can start creating them.
I can envision a situation where a seller might have more than two.
Exactly.
For example, a seller may, for example, have some listings where the seller pays for return shipping and where the buyer pays.
Correct.
And on top of that, some sellers may have listings where they want to offer the buyer the option of money back.
Which is the default.
Yes, the default. But if a seller has, say, flatware of the same pattern, that seller may want to offer the option of a replacement.
Yeah, or some sellers may want to offer the buyer an exchange, like for a sweater of a different size or color.
As long as the seller has the sweater in a different color or size.
Yeah, right. Of course, that goes without saying. If the seller doesn't, for whatever reason, have that, the seller can just give a money back refund.
So for each variation, the seller should provide the information and the policy name in a way that makes it easy to distinguish between the return policies.
Bingo, Brian. Now, once you have either edited or created all the return policies you need, you can start reassigning these policies to existing listings as needed.
By clicking the reassign policies button?
Whoa, down boy. Don't press that button quite yet. That feature is not selective. You use it if you want to assign all the listings of one policy to another policy.
Oh, right. Wait, I'm not sure I want to do that.
No, I didn't think so. Of course, if that is what you want to do, then go ahead. Click the reassign policies button and follow the instructions. However, if it isn't, If what you want to do is assign the policy to selected listings, use the bulk edit feature in the Active View in Seller Hub.
In Active View, I would manually select each listing that has a return policy I want to change by checking its checkbox.
Yes.
Then click the edit button.
Yes.
And follow the steps from there.
Exactly. Once you have reassigned all your existing listings to the right return policy, you can start on the really thorny ones.
Shipping.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I thought if we used return as an example, because now we have shipping policies, which can be all over the place.
Especially for people who are doing multiple types of items.
Exactly. This is where the paper and pencil will come in handy.
Or the laptop with a with notes open or Word open or whatever your Word document, Google Sheets, whatever.
Lotus Notes or Word Perfect if you're old school, right? But first, find your most used shipping policy and click Edit. We'll use that as an example. Then go through the text fields, apply your naming convention. For example, the most used shipping policy for my listings is USPS First Class Package with free shipping with added paid service options for USPS Priority and Express. No international shipping, so I don't have GSP checked. And the name I give it looks like this. USPS FCP. For first class package, free, which means that the buyer isn't paying, I'm paying, priority and express paid as the second and third option, no GSP, and then calc for calculated.
Right.
I used it as an example here to say, because if you have flat and calculated rates, you may want to indicate in your name whether it's calculated or flat. In reality, I only use calculated. I have not used flat rate shipping in years. That's the name. When I see it come up in the policy list, I can read it really quick and say, yes, that's the one I want.
And all of those options align with the options you chose in the template for this policy.
Yes, but that is a good point because when you're reviewing policies that you're going to keep, make sure that what you name them matches every option in the actual template. While I was doing research for this episode, I found one shipping policy where the name said no international, but global shipping program was checked. Luckily, it was assigned to zero listings, so I was okay.
Lucky.
Yeah.
I think I can see now how this can get real complicated quickly.
Yeah.
There are three different carrier services to choose from.
As well as freight and local pickup.
And each carrier has its own list of services.
And the list of services for each is long.
And a seller can offer up to three carrier service options per one policy. My head is already spinning.
Now you see why a naming convention is so important. So before you start redoing your shipping policies, note the most popular and look for those that are not being used at all. Those you might want to delete.
Now?
Well, yeah, now, immediately. If you have a few of them, and I suspect that some sellers may have pages of them at this point, deleting them will make the task ahead seem, well, smaller, because you won't have to worry about them.
Okay, I didn't have pages, but I had close to a page of them, so I've deleted all of those assigned to zero listings. Now what?
Now go back to each policy assigned to the most listings. Click its edit link and start cleaning them up. Rename them with your pertinent information in your naming convention that you have chosen. Do this for every policy that has at least one listing assigned to it.
Wait, shouldn't I be reassigning them first if needed?
No, I don't think so. It's better to get all your policy names and definition in order first so that you don't make mistakes in reassigning. And this also gives you the opportunity to make sure that the name of the policy matches the options selected. So you don't end up with that problem I had.
This could be a lot of work.
Yes, it can, but it has to be done. You could break it up into batches, I suppose, and tackle them a little bit at a time. But if you're like me, once I start a project, I can't stop. I have to do it all until it's finished.
So as a seller, I need to ask myself the following. Which carriers do I utilize?
Yep.
Which classes of service?
Correct.
Do I ship internationally?
Always a wise option.
Do I offer alternative international shipping besides the eBay Global Shipping Program or eBay Standard Delivery?
Yes, you might do that.
Do I offer free shipping or paid shipping?
Or a mix of both.
Do I sometimes offer a choice of two or three services?
Absolutely.
Do I provide local pickup? And if I do, do I sometimes offer it as the only option, say for big pieces of heavy furniture?
Good question.
Or a car?
Or a car.
Do I ship using a freight service?
An excellent option, which we will explore in a future episode.
Do I have different handling time?
You might.
And do I sometimes add a handling fee?
Squeezing out those margins again, Brian.
Oh, and a big one.
What?
Do I offer all calculated shipping or all flat rate or a little of both?
Okay, bingo. Now you considered all of the possible permutations of a shipping policy, at least that you might need. Now you should have an idea based on what you need, how much work's going to be involved. That's why I suggest a pad and pencil. You'll want to map out all the different combinations of services and options that you'll need for your listings, those various policies that you're going to rely on before jumping into the create a policy form.
I can see now that there are hundreds of possible shipping policies. How many do you have right now?
Well, I have just 15, but I winnowed those 15 down from over 60 at one point.
And how did that process go?
Well, like I just said, it was a process. First, I have to mention that there are some options I didn't need to consider. I don't use flat rate shipping. I don't use local pickup. I'm a very shy person. And I focus on two carriers and few classes of service. So, for example, I use UPS a lot, but I only use UPS Ground because it's turning out to be, well, it's an economical service.
Griff, not shy. I'll let our listeners decide whether or not that's true.
I am. I'm very shy.
So none of the other options are in any of the other shipping policies?
Correct. My big issue was creating versions of each policy for global shipping and for no global shipping since, like, again, I sell a lot of fragrances and I don't want to ship them internationally. It's a hassle and it's restricted. I need two versions of most of my shipping policies to handle both scenarios. And to do so, I had to write down each one first on a pad with my little pencil, very old school.
Which is one way to do it.
Yeah.
Pad and pencil.
Yeah. It's very old school, and it's how my brain works best.
And you're stuck to your naming convention.
I did. It made it so much easier to manually clean up and reassign policies later. And for the record, I can give you a list of my shipping policies by name.
Before we jump a little bit,
yeah,
I'm thinking an Excel spreadsheet would actually be a good way to manage this too.
Well, that's another way to do it. You could use an Excel spreadsheet or any spreadsheet like Google Sheets, but again, pad of paper.
It worked. Okay, I want you to read them out.
Okay, I'm going to do this as quick as possible. USPS, FCP, free, priority and express paid, no GPS, calc. We already did that. That's the most popular one. I won't read the whole list. I'll read five. UPS Ground, buyer pays, no GPS. USPS FCP, free, priority express, buyer pays, plus GSP. USPS Media Mail, free, first class, priority paid, plus GSP. USPS FCP, again, that's first class package, buyer pays, GSP. So, and it goes on. The whole list goes down. There's different permutations. So those are just five or six examples of my shipping policies, of which there's now 20. Also, you'll notice on the right-hand side, they're in the list, the definitions that you use, that description, I mean, those show up there. So I can see really quickly when I go down.
That's helpful.
That's very helpful because
you can see which ones you don't do with fragrances.
Right. It says no fragrance, no fragrance, no fragrance, and then occasionally fragrance okay. So for UPS Ground, buyer pays, no GPS, fragrance okay.
Yeah, that really helps make quick decisions then on the type of product you're listing. I also see you have a few there with zero assigned listings. Why not delete them?
Yeah, I gave some thought to that first, and I decided to keep some of them. I may need them in the future, and there's only a handful. You know, for example, I may use freight someday, so I kept that just in case. You never know. I have some big pieces that I might sell by freight. Who knows? We'll see. So after this step in the exercise, you should be able to scroll through the entire list of policies that you have and determine which ones are not assigned. They'll show as zero listings and safely delete those to pare down your list.
And later, when I list an item, I can locate the appropriate shipping policy and assign it with one click from the drop-down list in the listing form.
It's easy peasy. And all it takes is a little, or in this case, a lot of initial organizing and renaming of your existing policies.
So really, it's not that complicated. It's just a matter of thinking through how you want to structure it for your specific business.
Yeah. In an upcoming episode, Brian, we're going to dive into the templates feature in Seller Hub to show how you can build listing templates with appropriate business policies built right into each template. So it's much easier to create a listing.
Before we jump off of this, especially with like shipping policies, if someone has like hundreds and hundreds, and most of them are not assigned to a listing.
Delete them.
I was going to ask you, is it just easier just to go through and just like delete them? And is there ever a case where someone should just almost like start over?
It's going to be hard to start over because you're going to have some listings correct. That are active, and you don't really want to mess with those. You could end up doing something you didn't intend to do. If you have page after page after page of policies with zero listings assigned, get rid of them. It's just going to make
simplify things.
Right. You're not going to be feeling overwhelmed by having five pages of policies like our poor Lucretia there.
Yes. And if you have questions or comments about business policies, call them in at 888-723-4630 or email them to podcast@ebay.com.
Yeah. And if you have a naming convention that you think might be better than mine, I want to know about it too. So send that in as well. And I trust this answers your question about business policies. Lucretia, I think she got more than she bargained for there. But if you still have questions, please do send them to us.
Do we have any other questions this week?
Well, we do indeed, and that'll bring us up to our next Q&A segment. You know, you got questions, right? So.
You got questions?
We've got answers. We got nothing but answers today.
So what's our first, or shall I say, next question?
Well, first up for this segment, we received a few questions about a topic we addressed in the last episode. You remember the question from Anthony, who wanted a way for suspending his eBay selling for 5 or 6 months using the time away feature.
I do. He was going to walk the Appalachian Trail, wasn't he?
He was. Or he is. I hope he's still planning to. And hey, by the way, Anthony, if you do this, let us know how it goes.
Send us a picture like while you're on the trail.
Right. Don't talk to strangers.
Maybe we should send him like an eBay water bottle that he can take with him on the trail.
Andy, get in touch with us. We'll send you some swag.
Yeah. Did he send us an address with? Oh, he called in, I think, didn't he?
Oh, you're right. He did call in. So I still have his address.
Yeah.
I'll send him some. Andy.
And I've got some water. I got a cool water bottle I can set up.
Right. I don't think a mug is going to be of much use on the trail. A porcelain mug.
If it was metal, maybe.
We'll send you some stuff.
So we sure digressed, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
We told him that it's not currently possible to suspend listings for more than the time allowed by the time away feature, which I believe is 2 weeks.
Exactly. Correct? Exactly. Yeah. Well, Anthony really, he got people thinking because we received a call in and an email from two other sellers who want the same thing. Let's listen to the call in question first.
Hey, Griff. This is Terry from Wisconsin. I just listened to episode 175. And with interest, the gentleman who was going to be going on a long hike and looking for options to put his store on hold, I have some of the same concerns. I do have some extended away time coming up. And I know recently I put my store on hold or on vacation, but it would look like 14 or 15 days, something like that was the maximum you could do that for, which was confirmed again with your discussion. Okay, this is going to sound like I'm asking how to play the system, but okay. I'm asking how to play the system. If I put my store on hold for 14, 15 days, could I ask somebody to come in every 2 weeks and help me ship stuff, but only for 3 days, 5 days, whatever? It'd be a shorter commitment for them. And then I could put my store on vacation settings again. How much time do I need to wait between putting my store on vacation to do it again? All right. Thanks. Bye.
We also received an email on the very same topic from eBay seller Ethan, who wrote, "Good morning. I first would like to thank you for all the information. By listening to the podcast, I've achieved top-rated seller status.
Congratulations, Ethan.
Within 4 months of my first sale. I am an eBay seller who does it as a hobby that makes money rather than a job. My question is, if I would go away and not be able to sell for a few months, but want to pick up right where I left off when I get back, what would I do? I have an eBay storefront and have seen the vacation mode doesn't extend past a month. And there is a way to get it to work for a month. The time away is 2 weeks, I think.
Right.
I would like to do this without having to end and redo all my listings. Any info would be great and much appreciated. Another weird question. Is there a way I can donate to the podcast? And if I can, would this be able to be written off as either a business expense or a charitable organization? I have to give my money up every spring. I'd rather it go to a small organization that has helped me a lot rather than Uncle Sam. Oh, Ethan, I think you mistake. The podcast is a part of eBay. So, yeah, we're not a small little nonprofit.
We're a small little organization. We're in a small little space.
Yeah,
within
a huge Forbes 500 company. Yes. So, yeah, no, we're not a nonprofit. And I would be remiss in telling you to put some money in an envelope and send it to us.
Griff is not a 501c3.
Not in the least.
Can I make a suggestion, though?
Yeah, what?
So if he has additional money, one of the things that he can do is in every one of his listings, he can choose a charity. And that way, every sale, some money goes to the charity of his choice.
Right. And those are tax deductible.
And they're tax deductible.
You get a receipt.
Sales. Saying, so look up eBay charities.
Yeah.
I guess we don't sound like a big corporate company then. or corporate podcast.
No, I wonder how many other people are making that mistake and thinking this is... Brian and I work for eBay. I've worked for eBay for 26 years.
And I've worked for 22.
Yeah, and we've got the gray hairs to prove it.
I'm losing the hair. That's my problem.
I was there a long time ago.
Back to Ethan.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of sellers are getting antsy to take extended vacation this time of year.
Well, that's understandable. I mean, after the last 2 years of lockdowns and travel restrictions, who can blame them?
I agree.
Yeah, but you know, Terry, let's start with Terry first.
Yeah,
don't play the system. So I talked to some folks in the product team about this, and although it's technically possible, you're going to put your account at risk because there's no guarantee when listings will not show up and when they will show up. You know, there's that indexing time, and you could end up having listings showing up and selling when you don't want them to, and then that could put your account at risk. So if you can't have someone there to fulfill your transactions, then consider suspending your store if you really need to go away. Now, what we talked about, and we'll talk about it in a moment, is there are some third-party solutions that might be able to help you. But right now, it's just not possible. I did get an interesting note from the product team when I asked them about this, and they said that there is nothing they can tell us for certain, but apparently the option to extend time away past 2 weeks is under consideration by that team.
Oh, great.
Specifically for those examples where someone might want to go away for a month or 2 months. Whether it's going to be 5 or 6 months, I can't say. But yeah, that's something they're thinking about.
Well, and I always think like it is software, so it is something that we should be able to
do. Yeah, we should be able to do.
Then there's another part of me that I always think, like if you owned a brick and mortar store and you were going on vacation for a month and you closed the door, if you didn't have permanent help to help open that door up the next morning, you lose out on those sales. And you can consider doing that. You hire someone to run your business while you're out.
Yeah, I suspect if you have thousands and thousands of listings, you're doing this as a business. It's not a hobby. And ending them all and then relisting them, that's just a lot of work. If you want to keep the business going, there should be a way for you to hire and train someone to fulfill your orders, even if you changed your handling time to like 7 days, 5 or 7 days, and have them come in each Friday and ship out everything that's sold that week. So it's a once a week job. It's somebody you can trust who's going to do this. Otherwise, that's the downside to owning your own business is you are the boss. And if you're the sole proprietor, you just can't give yourself time off. And then, you know, someone's going to walk in and run your business for you.
Ethan, in the meantime, our three recommendations for extended time away from your eBay selling is to either
hire someone to fulfill orders in your absence, which may not work for you if you're selling on eBay as just a hobby.
Use a third-party listing management tool like 6bit, which allows you to upload your listings to a folder for storage. You could then end all your listings and download the saved listings back to eBay on your return.
Yeah, I talked to someone in their support who reconfirmed that you can do this. Of course, a third-party service like 6bit, it's a wonderful service. Sellers love it. But it's a service and it has a cost. It's most likely a monthly subscription, but it may be worth it.
And the third option is to end all your listing and relist them individually upon return, which, depending on how many listings you have, could be an enormous amount of work.
Yeah, it could be. Make sure that if you do the third last resort option, it's going to help if you have all of your original item photos somewhere handy so you don't have to retake them. Because if you're going to end your listing and you don't have the photos, that's going to end up being the big workload is having to retake all those pictures. So
our next question is a call in from someone we answered last week, eBay seller Curtis.
Yeah, Curtis called in with another question. And Curtis, let's take a listen first.
Hey, Griff, this is Curtis Ward again from Curtis Loves by Selling Trade. I want to give my store name out to my friends and my family. They're all interested in it. But I heard that if people go to your page and they don't buy anything, that it actually hurts your listings. Like it won't pop up as much. People are wondering, they see me going with all this stuff and I don't want to share it to them because I don't want to hurt my page. So thank you. I hope I hear my question on there. Thanks. Bye.
Well, Curtis, it's an interesting question because
I know what he's referencing.
I know what he's referencing too. What would you say to Curtis?
I would say if you have people that are interested in buying your items, as opposed to just looking at your store, give your user ID away. Share it as much as you want because you want those people looking at your items and hopefully purchasing them.
There's really no risk, by the way. I think he's probably read this somewhere on some board. Oh, if somebody looks at your listing and doesn't buy it, it's going to hurt your listing.
Well, and we do within search. There are a number of factors that we consider within search results. And, you know, one of those is like the buyer's interest in the listing. And one of the ways the team measures that, along with a whole bunch of other variables, is someone looking at the item and buying it, or are they just looking at the item?
Exactly.
That tends to apply more to somebody with a multi-quantity listing.
Exactly.
As opposed to
a single fixed price
OOAK
listing.
Or one of a kind.
Unless your extended family is, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people and you're going to give them the URL to your store and they're going to visit it and look at a bunch of listings. You just have, Curtis, there's nothing to worry about.
Of course, Curtis may have like 100,000 friends and family, and if all of them looked at it, might have an impact.
But I guarantee you, he'd probably make a sale.
Yes, you're right.
So marketing should be targeted. You're right, yes. Curtis. That's always. But I would caution you. Don't worry about it. And in fact, if you're proud of what you've achieved, and it sounds like you have, because he's done well. He's just started doing this, and he's head into it now. He says he's selling about 5 items a day. Let your family know. Give them the URL. Let's show them what you're doing.
They may know somebody that they then refer it to. Ooh, so like it's not always that individual who ends up buying something. It's another referral.
Yeah. So don't worry about it. I would do it. And let us know how that works. And our final question this week, Brian, is from eBay seller Jason. Here, Brian, why don't you read this one? I've been doing a lot of talking.
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
So Jason emailed podcast@ebay.com with the following. Hi there, eBay team. I have a question on shipping via the mobile app. We charge a flat amount to ship a larger item. When we ship to the West Coast, it's usually a lower price via UPS. However, that option doesn't come up in the app, just FedEx or USPS. Will UPS be added to the mobile app in the future, or is it there and we are missing it? Love the podcast and would love a mug. Sweet Tea Pickens is our store name. Jason.
Sweet Tea Pickens. Now, that's a great name.
It is.
You're not going to forget that name.
No. Right?
Well, Jason, it's a good question. And when I checked, I confirmed it because I'd never really looked. I don't print labels off of the mobile app. But when I went into the mobile app for a sold item and looked to print a label, the FedEx was there, USPS was there, UPS, which I use a lot, isn't there. So I asked Nate Hayward, you may remember him, he's been on our show, he's a member of the shipping team. I asked him about this and he said, hey Griff, UPS and eBay delivery services are not yet available within the app. The shipping team is working to add them with the rest of the carriers to the app sometime this year. In the meantime, sellers who want to print out a UPS label on their mobile phone can still do so by using the mobile website through a browser. So if you go to your like Safari or Chrome on your phone and you type in
eBay.com,
you'll be taken to the website and you can print out a UPS label from there if you need to.
So that's an option for them until Nate and the shipping team
add it.
Yep.
And believe me, I know that this is a top priority, especially as I keep spending more money buying UPS labels.
I'm just on the mobile app more and more and more.
Yeah, I use it a lot.
I hardly sit down at my desktop.
Yeah, me too. Now that I use my iPhone to take all of my photos, I gave up cameras finally. And it's just easier sometimes to do, once they're on the phone, to do some things with your phone, like adding them to a draft, for example. Right. And the camera situation with the latest iPhones now, they're brilliant. They take really good photos. And I just don't, I was using my, I had a small camera, a Panasonic Lumix LX7, and a great camera. I just don't use it anymore. It's too much work.
Well, one thing, if you've finally been able to move on from the camera, maybe we can get you to move on from the pen and paper.
You know what I use pen and paper for a lot now? So I'm sitting down every morning. I have my brain exercises I do. I go to the New York Times Spelling Bee game, which is cool. They give you a set of letters and you have to make, you know, words. And like everyone else, Wordle.
Yes.
Right. But I work Wordle by using pad and paper and, you know, notating. If I get two letters right, then I write down all the permutations of where those two letters could go. And it helps me come up with an answer. I'm never going to give up my pad and pencil.
Tactile.
Yeah, it's too tactile for me.
Do you have a burning question about selling on eBay?
Dear listener.
Or even recommendations on how to get grip off of pen and paper? Why not let us take a stab at answering it? Just call in to 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. Leave a question or comment on the voice line, and if it's appropriate, we'll put it on the air.
And if you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And it's time for your daily podcast to-do checklist.
Check out the announcement board for up-to-date seller news, including stuff on weather.
Yeah, and normally here we say go visit the eBay community pages, but I want to add something because I think a lot of our listeners aren't aware that there's now a Discuss This Podcast page. So if you go to ebay.com/podcast, there's a link on the top for a drop-down, and one of them is for the podcast library, and the other one is Discuss This Podcast, and that's where I think I'm going to upload some screenshots of my business policies on that page for the Discuss This episode.
And that podcast discussion is only open for a day, right?
No, I now keep it open.
Okay, you keep it open now.
Yeah, for a week or so, and then we close it and go on to the next one.
So join Griff on the podcast discussion.
Yeah, and our third point.
Check out the transcript for this and all episodes to follow up on what you've heard and to see the links we referenced during the episode.
On our next episode, we're going to talk about some important updates.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.